speak about something that has connection to last week's Sedra and this coming week's Sedra. There's a Gemara in Brachos, Daf Nun Hei. The Gemara says like this, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to build the Mishkan, he told them first to build the Mishkan and then to make the Kelim, the various vessels. When Moshe Rabbeinu told it to Bezalel, he switched it around. And he said, first make the vessels and then make the Mishkan. Bezalel said, that can't be. Lo kach min hago shalolim. That's not the way of the world. A person doesn't bring his furniture and build a house around it. But you build the house, then you put in the furniture. And if I make the Kelim first, Kelim shani osa lehechanach nisim, where are we going to put it? Must be that God told you that you should build the Mishkan first and then the Kelim. And Moshe said, you know, you're right. V'tzeil keil ha'yisa v'yadata. You were in the shadow of God and you knew what God told me. And that's why he was called Bezalel. V'tzeil keil, in the shadow of God. A few questions. First of all, how in the world did Moshe Rabbeinu switch what the Rabban Shalom said? If he did it on purpose, hard to believe why he would do such a thing, even if it was to test Bezalel, right, but you don't play around with the tzivui from the Rabban Shalom, how to build a Mishkan. And it was Moshe Rabbeinu Chas V'Shalom made a mistake. Didn't know. And the whole Torah, maybe somebody else didn't catch him. So that's impossible to say either. Secondly, it says that he was called Bezalel because he was in the shadow of God. L'chora, it should have said he was in the light of God. The euphemism for clarity is or. Borer kashemesh. Right? It's clear as sun. Clear as daylight. The euphemism for doubt is tzeil, shade, shadow of a doubt, right? Tzilo shel safek, used in Hebrew also. So, if he wanted to say that Bezalel knew what God said, he should have said, you were in the light of God, not in the shadow of God. Why Bezalel? Should have been Orkel, that should have been his name. In order to understand this, I want to start with something else from last week's Sedra. And then we'll explain this medrash, and then we'll apply it to something from this week's Sedra. The Gemara says that the Aron was made with gold on the inside and gold on the outside. And the way that Chazal described that is that we learn from there that a Talmud Chacham should be Tocho Kibaro. His inside should be like his outside. That he should be through and through a Talmud Chacham, not only on the inside, the outside, both inside and outside. Now the way the Chachamim describe how a Talmud Chacham should be, that his inside should be like his outside, implies that which one comes first? The outside. But you should try to make the inside like the outside. L'chora, on the surface, that doesn't seem right. The first thing a person should work on is his inside. What he thinks, what he believes, what his midos are, and then he should reflect that on the outside. But it seems from this like the outside is the most important thing, and then hopefully you'll get to the inside too. Put on a black hat and a jacket and look like a Talmud Chacham, and then you could learn also and, you know, be a Talmud Chacham. But the ikar is the dressing on the outside, and the inside should be like the outside. So, what does it mean? The answer is that since we are human beings, we are affected more by what we do. And that creates emotions. Let me tell you a story and I'll see how it pans out. When I was a rabbi in Miami, I had a woman who was basically, she grew up in a religious home, but a very modern Orthodox home. What here they call Dati Light, you know, very, laid back, Yiddishkeit, kashrus, as long as they had a K somewhere on the label, even in the name of the product, it was kosher. The Shabbos, you didn't drive, you didn't answer the phone, but the other rest of the 39 malachas, they didn't know too much about or whatever. And that was basically the kind of observance she had. And her husband was pretty much the same. Then they had a child, And she got a lot more serious about Yiddishkeit and felt that she has to bring up this child something more meaningful. So she started reading and learning and coming to shiurim, and she first upgraded the kashrus of her home and only brought in reliable hechsherim and made sure that everything was tovel, and took her about a year to really get up to par. Then she took on Shabbos to upgrade her Shabbos observance, and this was another year. Finally, I told her one day, I said, you know, I think you're ready for the next project. That is dressing modestly. In Miami in those days, if people got dressed, it was a milah. But most of the people did not dress halachically, modestly, except for the rabbi's wives and the teachers and the day school's wives. But otherwise, most of the women did not dress modestly. Surely married women didn't cover their hair. So I told her, I think, you know, you have to start covering your hair. It was not an easy thing because her mother was from and she didn't cover her hair, and most of the women there didn't. So she said to me, Rabbi, I don't want to be a hypocrite. I don't feel yet like a Rebbetzin. I don't want to look like one and be a hypocrite. As soon as I feel like a Rebbetzin inside, I will dress as one on the outside. That was her answer. I said, you know what you can be compared to? Imagine somebody comes to shul on Simchas Torah, and he says, you know, I don't want to be a hypocrite. I'm not really happy. So if I dance now around the Torah, people are going to think I'm happy with the Torah, and I'll be a hypocrite. So I'm going to sit here and contemplate being happy, and as soon as I'm happy, I'm going to get up and dance. The guy will sit there till Tisha. That's not how you become happy. You become happy by dancing. Motions create emotions. Well, as the Sefer HaChinuch says, in his Hakdama, and in many of the mitzvahs, going through the motions, that's what mitzvahs are. Mitzvahs are going through the motions, and hopefully they will engender and generate emotions, ideas. That's what the Torah gave us. It's like, I always like to compare it to a starter motor of a car. When you turn the key, it doesn't have enough power to turn over the big motor. They used to have a little starter motor that you turn that, and that motor then turned the big engine on. So that's the idea. Your body has to get your neshama moving. It's hard to get your neshama moving directly. But if you get your body moving in the right direction, it pulls the neshama along and arouses the neshama. So that is what's it called, the idea. That toho kebaro in a chanami. We live in a world where we have to start with the externals. And that's not hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is where you don't want to get to the goal. And this is not a means to reach. You just want to put on a show. But if you're interested in getting to where you want to go, you want to be happy. You want to, feel modest. Then fine, then dress modestly. You're not going to feel modest dressed in a bathing suit. But if you dress modestly, you'll feel modest. Person dresses conservative dress clothing, what's it called? Not casual clothing. It feels more serious. When you dress in a Hawaiian shirt and Bermuda shorts, you don't feel, you know, very serious about yourself or about anything else. So the externals have to generate the internals. So therefore, when it says toho kebaro, the inside should be like the outside, that is the way it is. Start with the outside and then make the inside like the outside. There's only one problem with that. And that is the Torah doesn't say that. That's how the rabbis describe the Aron, toho kebaro. And that's how it transfers to a Talmud Chacham. How it intimates a Talmud Chacham. But the Torah doesn't say that. The Torah says, when it speaks about the Aron, the tzipisa oso zahav tahar, mi bias, from the inside, umichutz, and on the outside, tetzapenu. So the Torah mentions the inside first, then the outside. So why did the rabbis describe it as starting with the outside and then going to the inside, when the Torah describes it as going from the outside to the inside? So I think the answer to that is the following, that really there were three coatings on the Aron. Starting with the outside, then the inside, and then the outside again. Well, how does that work? Rashi says they have three boxes. One wood, middle size. Larger gold, smaller gold. they put the wooden box into the gold box, the bigger gold box, so now the Aron was covered with gold on the outside. That was the first stage. Then they put the little box of gold inside the wooden box. Now it was covered on the inside. So outside, inside. But then there's one more thing that has to be done. The rim, so you could still see a sandwich. If you look down on the Aron, you see gold, wood, gold. So you have to cover now the wood around the rim. That's again on the outside. So you have outside, inside, outside. That's what the Torah says. V'tzipisa oso zahav tahar. If it only said that, I would say to cover it on the outside, like all the other vessels. Then it says, mibayis u'michutz. It's not a qualification, it's an addition. First, cover it on the outside. Then, mibayis, then on the inside. And then again on the outside to cover the rim. Now, what does that mean, though? So we understand, you start with the emotions, and now you get emotions. What's the next stage? Well, again, on the outside. The idea, I think, is the following. Let's go back to the guy who's dancing on Simchas Torah. He gets up and dances and gets himself happy with the Torah. Okay, his motions created now emotions. Now he's happy with the Torah. Should he sit down and stop dancing now? The whole purpose of the dancing was to arouse his neshama to be happy. So he's happy. So stop. No. This is still an inyan to continue dancing. Why? The Ramban, in his Perush to the Aseres HaDibros, Perush to the Aseres HaDibros, a separate sefer that the Ramban wrote, small like pamphlets kind of sefer. In there, he explains a pasuk in Shir HaShirin the following way: Al matoiru umataoru es ha'ava ad shetechpats. He says what it means is the following: do not arouse feelings of love or fear of God, or any other kinds of tremendous, lofty, spiritual emotions, ad shetechpats, until you put it into something concrete, into a chefetz. You quantify it. Don't leave it ethereal, just a spiritual feeling, spiritual experience, but put it into something physical. Because when you take spiritual feelings and you clothe them in physical things, they're more real. They make more of an impression. And they are more concrete, literally. So therefore, the order is outside, in order to get your neshama moving, the emotions generate the emotions. And once you have the emotions, then you go through the motions again to express those emotions in a concrete way. So there are two purposes of doing things from an external physical way. One, to arouse the internal, and then to express the internal. Those are two things. That's the whole inyan of an Nisayon, the Ramban says in another place. Right? God tested Avram, didn't know what the outcome of the test was going to be. Why did he test him? But for Avram's sake, knowing that he has tremendous Yirah Shamayim, but never putting it into practice, putting it and expressing it in a real physical way isn't the same as just having these ideas. So he wanted him to be able to actualize that potential that he had. Actualizing potential, this world is an important thing. That explains the whole concept of a Suvas Mitzvah. You have a bris. What do? Eat. Pidyon HaBen, eat. Shabbos, eat. Yontif, eat. We're always eating. Right? What in the world does eating have to do with all these mitzvahs? Right? Now the answer is, if you're happy and you want to express that happiness, express that satisfaction with the mitzvah, doing it in a physical way expresses it in a much more concrete fashion than expressing it spiritually. In fact, Rav Moshe Cordovero, the Kabbalist, says that you would think that the highest level is a spiritual world without any physicality. And therefore, once a person leaves his physical world, he goes to Gan Eden, that's it. He says, no. The tzaddikim in Gan Eden look forward to Tchias HaMeisim, when they'll be able to come back into a body, like we look forward to Moshiach. Because a neshama in a body is a much greater level than neshama by itself. Because now you can express all those feelings in a concrete way. And that explains a very difficult Ramban. The Ramban says that Olam Haba and Tchias HaMeisim are the same thing. Unlike the Rambam, who says that Olam Haba is not the same thing as Tchias HaMeisim. Olam Haba is a spiritual world that exists now, comes after death. That's why it's called Olam Haba. It comes after you die. And our neshamas were there before we were born. They go back to there after we die. And we're there until a time will come and there'll be a Tchias HaMeisim. From that Olam Haba, the neshamas will come back into a body, the ones that deserve it, or for whatever reason. And then the end result will be that the neshamas will once again leave the body, go back to Olam Haba. That's the Rambam. The Ramban says no. Olam Haba and Tchias HaMeisim are synonymous. Olam Haba is the world to come when there will be Tchias HaMeisim, and it's like a recreation or a refashioning of the world to accommodate eternal bodies. The Ramban learns that the last stage of history is not totally spiritual. It's not that the neshamas will be back in a spiritual world. They'll be in a physical world, except the physical world will be redesigned to accommodate eternal bodies and souls. At the last stage of history is body and soul together. They ask on the Ramban, but it says in Olam Haba there's no eating, no drinking, right, no sitting. So it doesn't sound like a physical world. He said, no, it's a physical world, except just like Moshe Rabbeinu had a body, and he was up on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights, didn't eat. Eliyahu didn't eat for 40. We won't need to eat or drink, but we'll have a body. So they ask on that, fine. Then why need a body for it? If you're not going to perform any of the physical functions that a body needs, then what do you need a body for? What's the purpose of the body? In this world, you need a body to give a place for the neshama to devolve into this world. So you have to eat and drink and keep your body going so it can remain a suit of clothing or even better, like a home for the neshama. But in the next world, you're not going to have to eat and drink the way you need a body for. So the answer they say is this idea, that in this world, the body serves two functions. It creates the wherewithal to let the neshama exist in this world. So you need the body to arouse the neshama. At the same time, the body expresses what the neshama feels in a concrete way. In the next world, in Tchias HaMeisim, which is Olam Haba, you won't need the body to arouse or to support the soul. Adarab, the soul will be the main thing and it'll support the body. It'll give the body nourishment. But you need the body to express the ideas that the soul has, because then it becomes more concrete. So we have, on both levels, we have the body arousing the soul and then being able to, what's it called, express that arousal physically. And we have the soul expressing itself through the body, both ends. First comes the outside, inside, outside. Okay. Now, we find in this week's Sedra a similar thing. It says there were two functions for the clothing of the Kohanim, the Big Day Kohanim. One was l'kadsho l'kahanoli, to sanctify the Kohen, that you should be able to be a Kohen. The clothing brings out the inner holiness of the Kohen. And the second is l'kavod l'tiferes, for honor and glory, that when people look at that clothing, they're aroused by a physical thing that shows them that the Kohen, somebody special. He's dressed in majesty and glory. So he brings honor to the Kohen and to the Rabban Shalom, who the Kohen represents. So the clothing has two functions. All clothing has both of those functions. On the one hand, clothing is there so a person can be modest. Why? Right? Is there something wrong with the body that we cover our body because it's tainted, bad, erotic, whatever it may be? If that's the case, then we should surely be matpid to cover animals' bodies because they're even worse than human bodies. But nobody to this day that I know of is matpid only to go to the zoo if the animals are dressed. Right? The only place I know where they dress their animals is in Los Angeles, and that has nothing to do with modesty because they don't dress themselves. So what does it mean? What is the concept of tznius, of modesty, in a nutshell? Until the sin of Adam and Chava, there was no need for clothing. Because it was obvious that a human being is a soul who wears a body like a suit of clothing to enable it to function in the physical world. It's like an astronaut. As long as the astronaut is on terra firma, he can function very nice without any apparatus or any special suit. Goes into outer space, which is incompatible with a human being. He needs a pressurized suit. He needs oxygen. He needs a radio to talk through because there's no sound waves. Comes back to Earth, takes off the spacesuit. So too, as long as we were neshamas, which we are neshamas. We are not bodies with little Casper the Friendly Ghost flitting around inside of us, right, called a neshama. We are neshamas. As long as we were in the spiritual world, we could function very nicely as a neshama. In a spiritual world, we could function, hear and see and get around without eyes, ears, and legs. But once we came to a physical world, we need a spacesuit to wear to be able to function in a physical world. You need eyes to see and ears to hear and a brain to think through. But you're a neshama wearing a suit of clothing called their body. So before the sin of Adam and Chava, it was clear that the neshama was the main thing of a person and the body was merely a set of tools that the neshama uses to function in the physical world. But, and that's why when a person dies, so he leaves the body here, just like the astronaut takes his suit off. Don't need it anymore. So you leave the body in this world. And that's why we tear our clothing to represent mourning, because it's only the clothing that's torn away. The essence of the person is still around. So that was till the sin of Adam and Chava. It was clear that the neshama is the main thing and the body is merely a suit of clothing that the neshama wears. But once Adam and Chava sinned, it wasn't clear anymore what's the ikar, because the sin was using the body in the detriment of the neshama. So maybe the body's the main thing. The body's not merely a tool that the neshama uses, because the body is used against the neshama. And maybe for that matter there is no neshama. You can't see it. All you see is a body. Maybe there's only a body. So in order to accentuate and emphasize, there's more here than meets the eye. Don't be distracted by what you see, because there's more here than meets the eye. And that is the neshama. We cover the body to distract attention from the body that could be attracting attention away from the neshama, to make the statement there's more here than you can see. And that intimates that there's a neshama too. That's the concept of tznius. Tznius is wherever there is an inner holiness and the externals can attract you, distract you from that internal holiness, we cover the externals to emphasize the internal. Okay. So therefore, the clothing creates a situation where you want to be aroused to the kedusha that's in the kohen, right? The kohen is not a holy person. He has a holy neshama. But you may get, what's it called, distracted by the body. So we cover the body in order to say there's more here than meets the eye. There's something beneath the surface you can't see. And that's the main thing here. Just like we're covering the body, it shouldn't distract you from that inner kedusha. So one function of the clothing is lekad shel lekad, to bring out the inner kedusha. Same thing we said, the externals bring out that those internals. But then there's a second purpose of the Big Day Kahuna. Lekavod the Litiferes. It's a glory and an honor to the Kohen. That when people see the clothing, they can see in a very concrete way his holiness expressed. It expresses the holiness in a physical, external way. So, same thing. The clothing on the one end engenders the holiness, and then it expresses it. That's the idea of the two functions of Big Day Kahuna, Lekad Shol Lekano. It creates the Kiddush of the Kohen itself, brings it out, and then it expresses it externally so you can see the glory and the honor of that Neshama, that Kiddush. Okay. Now, let's get back to the original Gemara that we spoke about. Even though Chazal say that the building of the Mishkan served as a kapara, as an atonement for the sin of the golden calf. But God commanded Moshe Rabbeinu the building of the Mishkan before there was a sin of the golden calf. So some say, well, God knew there was going to be a sin, so he did it in anticipation. But others say, no. The Mishkan would have been, even had there been no sin of the golden calf. But once they sinned with the golden calf, aspects of the Mishkan took on a second idea, second purpose of atoning for the sin of the golden calf. But its main purpose was not to atone for the sin of the golden calf. We needed a Mishkan, even if there had been no sin of the golden calf. Once it was a sin of the golden calf, the Mishkan took on another aspect to it as an atonement for that. But that wasn't the main reason why it was built. If that's the case, then there would have been a very significant difference between the purpose of the Mishkan before the sin of the golden calf and after. Before the sin of the golden calf, God said, "Bechol hamakom asher azkir shmi avoy lecha v'irachticha. Wherever I allow you to mention my name, I will come and bless you." Doesn't have to be in any special place. You could be aroused to God's presence everywhere in the world. You didn't need some physical place to direct your attention towards God. You could do it everywhere. Before the sin, they were on a much higher level, and God's presence was felt everywhere. So when God told Moshe to build the Mishkan under those circumstances, really, what's it called, the Mishkan itself, the infrastructure wasn't the main thing. Because you could feel, you didn't have to come to the Mishkan to feel God's presence. You could feel it everywhere. But once you were aroused to God's presence anywhere, come to the Mishkan and use the utensils to express it. Use the vessels. That would have been, had there been no sin of the golden calf. Once it was a sin of the golden calf, you needed the Mishkan to arouse you to feeling God's presence. So first you needed the Mishkan, and then once you're aroused to God's presence, now use the vessels in service of God. But then the vessels come second. When God told Moshe Rabbeinu the mitzvah of the Mishkan, it was before the sin of the golden calf. And even though God knew there was going to be a sin of the golden calf, that didn't affect their free choice. Because somehow, miraculously, God's knowledge does not affect free choice. Someday maybe we'll discuss that, how we can understand why we can't understand it, but some of the ramifications. But the easiest thing is to say that God functions in a way that he doesn't let his knowledge get in the way of our free choice. He functions if he doesn't know. Okay. So if God knew there was going to be a sin of the golden calf, wouldn't a problem. Wouldn't be a problem. But the Meshech Chochmah says that's only if God knows. But if God tells human beings, or even angels know, their knowledge does affect free choice. Therefore, God could not tell Moshe something that would intimate to him that there's going to be a change in the way things are. Because as things stood then, there was no sin of the golden calf. You didn't need a Mishkan to arouse you to God's presence. It was everywhere. So what did you need the Mishkan for? Once you're aroused to God's presence anywhere in the world, come to the Mishkan and express it through the vessels. So what came first? The vessels. And then through those vessels, you create even a higher environment than the Mishkan. Now, had God told Moshe Rabbeinu, but after the sin of the golden calf, this idea of feeling God's presence everywhere didn't exist. They made an intermediary, and it affected their relationship to God. And now they needed something to arouse them to feeling God's presence, which is the Mishkan. So after the sin of the golden calf, the first stage was the Mishkan. Feel God's presence in this infrastructure, and then express it through the Kelim. Now, had God told Moshe Rabbeinu the second way, which God knew was going to be, how it was going to have to be, because it was going to be after the sin of the golden calf that it was erected, Moshe would have said, hey, what's going on? Why do I need a Mishkan to feel God's presence? Must be there's going to be a sin. Something's going to happen. They're going to fall off their level. And God couldn't let Moshe know that. So therefore, the Rabban Shem told it to Moshe in a way that masked it, that made it obscure, that didn't make it clear. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu understood, but God fooled him, that first comes the Mishkan, first comes the Kelim, then comes the Mishkan. That was the level they were on at the time. But God really said it in an obscure way that he really didn't mean that. But he made Moshe Rabbeinu, he put him in the dark, he put him in the shade, so he shouldn't know. Because if he would know, then he would know there's going to be a sin, and that can't be. Therefore, when Bezalel said, look, lo kach min hago shalom, that's not the way the world is now. That's the way the world was when you got this command on Har Sinai before the sin of the golden calf. But now the Jews sinned with the golden calf, they need the Mishkan first. Because if I don't build the Mishkan, what are you going to do with the Kalim? They still have to be aroused to service of God. They can't just do it. They need to be aroused to it. They need to go through the motions of coming to a mikdash and being impressed with God's presence. So now, if I make the Kalim, where are we going to put them? What am I going to use them for? First, they need to be aroused to use those Kalim. Now the main thing is not expressing the feeling, but getting the feeling first. But Moshe couldn't know that. So Bezalel said, it must be God told you the other way, knowing that there was going to be a sin of the golden calf, but he hid it from you. So Moshe said, you were in the shadow of God. You were in the shadow that God cast on me, and you understood that really it should be the other way. That's what the Medrash means. Moshe Rabbeinu was led to believe that the Kalim became for the Mishkan. Because if he didn't think that, he would know there's going to be a sin. But when he told it to Bezalel, Bezalel got the idea that God only led him on that he shouldn't know there's going to be a sin of the golden calf. But now, after the sin, that's not the order anymore. The order is Mishkan and then Kalim, not Kalim and then Mishkan. That's the idea. And and that's why he's called Bezalel, not what's it called, the Or Ale, but Bezalel. You knew the shadow that God cast over me to make me think that it was the other way, but now it became obvious that it has to be the opposite because of the sin of the golden calf. This explains one more thing that the Meshech Chochma speaks about from a little bit different perspective, but according to what I just told you now, fits beautifully. In Parshas Vayakil, later on, the Torah says the mitzvah of Shabbos, and then it describes the building of the Mishkan. Chazal learned from that Shabbos takes precedence over the Mishkan, and you don't build the Mishkan on Shabbos. In fact, we learn what's prohibited to do on Shabbos from the things they did during the week in the Mishkan. Those are the malachas. Interesting, though, in the Sedra of Kisisa, the earlier Sedra, okay, it mentions Shabbos after the Mishkan. It would follow then, had we only had Parshas Kisisa and not Vayakel, we would say that the Mishkan, the building of the Mishkan would supersede Shabbos. Because it depends which one's first. If the Mishkan is first, then the Mishkan supersedes Shabbos. If Shabbos is first, then it supersedes the Mishkan. So in Vayakel Taka, Shabbos comes before the Mishkan. But in Kisisa, the Mishkan comes before Shabbos. Why did the rabbis learn from there that you can build the Mishkan on Shabbos? The answer I want to say is that in Kisisa, it was before the sin of the golden calf. In the Torah, it's before the sin of the golden calf. In Vayakel, it's after the sin of the golden calf. Before the sin of the golden calf, we said the purpose of the Mishkan was not to create a feeling of God's presence, but to serve God's presence by expressing that feeling in a concrete way. It's service to God's presence and not the creation of a feeling of God's presence. After the Chet HaEgel, you needed the Mishkan both to create a feeling of God's presence and then to serve it. Now, the Meshech Chochma says, I think he says this, but in any case, that service to God is Dolcha Shabbos in the Mikdash. You can make korbanos, light fires, cook meat on Shabbos, right? Because Shabbos, certain sacrifices are Dolcha Shabbos. They push away the Shabbos. Why? Because the sacrifices aren't to create a feeling of God's presence, but to serve God's presence. That doesn't contradict the Shabbos. Shabbos is a time where you feel God's presence. If I would build a Mishkan so I'd have a place to feel God's presence, it would contradict the Shabbos. What do I need a Mishkan for? I have Shabbos. So therefore, Shabbos takes precedence over the Mishkan. But if the purpose of the Mishkan is not to feel God's presence, that you feel everywhere, you need it to express it in a physical way, that service of God's presence, that you can do on Shabbos. Shabbos is contradicted by trying to create a feeling of God's presence, because Shabbos can do that. Why duplicate? But if it's to serve God's presence, fine. You can serve God's presence on Shabbos too. So, therefore, before the sin of the golden calf, Einachinami, the Mikdash came before Shabbos. You could build the Mishkan on Shabbos. Because the purpose of the Mishkan was not to bring about a feeling of God's presence, which would contradict Shabbos, which does the same thing, but rather to, once you feel that presence, could be feeling from Shabbos, to make the Kalim to express it. But once there was a sin of the golden calf, the whole purpose of the Mishkan became different. It's no longer just a place to express your feeling of God's presence in a concrete way. But first you have to get that feeling in the Mishkan. So therefore, if you don't get that feeling first, right, then the Mishkan's not going to be worth anything. The Mekalim aren't going to be worth anything. That's what Bezalel said. If I build the Kalim first, where am I going to put them? I need first an infrastructure to feel to serve God. But building the Mishkan was to feel God's presence. That doesn't supersede Shabbos. So that's in Vayakel. Vayakel is after the sin of the golden calf. Shabbos does not supersede the Mishkan. But in Kisisa, it's before the sin of the golden calf. There, Shabbos is superseded by the building of the Mishkan. You could build the Mishkan on Shabbos, because the purpose of the Mishkan was not to bring about a feeling of God's presence, which would be in contradiction to Shabbos, because that does it. Why do you need something else, right? But rather to serve God's presence, that's like bringing sacrifice on Shabbos. The whole building of the Mishkan was to serve God's presence, not to create a feeling of it. But that was only before the sin of the golden calf. After the sin of the golden calf, Shabbos took precedence over the Mishkan, and wasn't Tocha Shabbos anymore. And then the main thing was the Mishkan, and secondary, the Kalim, whereas before the Cheto Egel, the main thing was the Mishkan. Well, the main thing was the Kalim, and then the Mishkan, and therefore, the Mishkan, building of the Mishkan, superseded Shabbos.